with Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 559 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by a fellow American College of Sports Medicine fitness professional who's going to be enlightening us about something I can guarantee you know bupkis about. All right, we're going to be talking about muscle power versus muscle strength. See, I told you, you know nothing about this, nothing. And this is so important for you. You got to know. So who are we going to be talking to today? Our expert is George Youssef. Now, he's an exercise physiologist on the sports rehabilitation and performance team at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York. I want to give them a shout out for doing a fantastic job of getting you all ready for this podcast. You've got quite a little team over there. So Rachel and her team, rock on. Now, he got his bachelor's degree in exercise science at Adelphi University. And here's the thing. You know, he walks the talk, or soccer's the talk. He also played collegiate soccer. And that's how this whole thing started, because isn't soccer about muscle power? I'm just saying, we're going to get there. And then he went on to pursue his master's degree at Adelphi University. And boy, oh boy, has he had a lot of time and fun working with the American College of Sports Medicine, where he became a certified clinical exercise physiologist through them. Now, I just want to let you know, the American College of Sports Medicine is the premier body for this. If you get anything from them, if you are certified, run to this person, because it is by far the hardest certification to get. And I've just got to tell you, you know, hats off to you, George, on that one. So rock on. Now, George, you were quoted in a really cool article that all of us physicians read. It's in Medscape, which is considered hallowed ground. And I tell you, I almost fell off my chair. I was so happy someone was finally talking about muscle power. Now, everyone out here in the Her podcast land knows for a fact that I rant and rave about muscle strength all the time. You know, I'm a resistance trained athlete, and I know the statistics on what happens if you do not have muscle strength, especially as you age after, say, 50 years old or more. And in your seventh decade, you're going to drop some of that lean body mass just by virtue of age. And that happens to Olympians. So, you know, get ready. So, George, what got you interested in this whole issue of muscle power?
Hi, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Well, I first really got involved with muscle power when I was at college, so Adelphi University. Really through my undergraduates and my graduate studies, I was really interested in a personal way on how I could make myself the best soccer player I could be. And that was always my aim. Somehow I could get a little advantage over my opponents in any way. Even the smallest little advantage can mean the difference in a lot of competitive sports. So I was really trying to give myself the best edge I could. Then I kind of got into muscle power, and we were a lot of training with our strength and conditioning coach, kind of the Olympic lifts, very kind of complicated movements, which were very beneficial and led to a lot of success for our team. But then also working with different clients through the whole spectrum, really. Different clients were younger athletes that wanted to be similar to me, very good at their sport. And also individuals kind of either retired or later on in life that also wanted to learn about muscle power as well as strength and how to really boost longevity and health.
All right. Let's define muscle power. We know what strength is, and that is, can you lift a certain weight, right? That's strength. So, you know, if I ask you to lift a, you know, a 25-pound bag of dog food, can you do it? Can you lift your groceries? That type of thing. But what's muscle power then?
Good question. So muscle power, the difference that kind of sets between muscle strength and power is the inclusion of a time aspect. So the equation for muscle power is force times velocity. So essentially, how quickly can you create that force and move that force? So when we're thinking about strength, we really want to move a high amount of force. We're not too concerned about the time aspect. However, when it comes to power, the force, the time, the velocity of the movement is what's really important.
All right. Why is it so important? I mean, in the article from Medscape, they quote an observational study that just came out by Mayo Clinic Proceedings. And in it, the author noted that it was the first time when they compared upper limb measurements of muscle power and strength in a large sample of the same individuals. And they found that muscle power, now get this, folks, significantly outperforms strength in predicting, drumroll, natural causes of mortality. What? Most people, I'll bet you're out there saying, well, wait a minute. Thought you've been telling me all along that, you know, I had to get strong and I'll be cool then. So I can lift that heavy bag or whatever. Now you're adding another element. So tell us more about what that study showed.
Oh, that was a very good study. So yes, a lot of the research has been coming out lately that power is a stronger predictor of longevity than actual strength. Strength is very, very important. To build that strength, we also need a foundation, a strong foundation of strength in order to progress to power. But that study was very important. It was very kind of bring to life because one of the major risks as we age is falls risk. One fall can be almost debilitating and could be very, very serious. So it just takes one fall. So we need a degree of strength, obviously, to avoid falling, to keep our good posture. But that's where the power comes in with the thought of velocity and how quickly we can produce that force. If we lose our balance, how quickly can we recapture that force? It's good to be able to create a lot of force, but in that moment, we need to be able to do it very quickly in order to catch our balance and regain ourselves to prevent that fall.
The number one prerogative of the human body, as I've, you know, repeatedly stated in other podcasts, is survival. If you have to survive, something's going on, right? So maybe someone's running after you, right? You don't convene a committee and discuss it like, you know, what should we do with this guy running after me? No, you run like hell is what you do. What if suddenly, you know, you're sitting down and somebody spills some very hot liquid on you, like coffee? What are you going to do? Just sit there and go, you know, wonder what I should know. You're hopping out of that chair in about, you know, 2 nanoseconds if it took you that long, because you need to immediately attend to burns, right? So one of the things that I loved about this muscle power thing is it gave purpose and meaning behind why you even care about it. It's because when you're actually trying to survive, you're actually moving kind of quickly. There are certain things that are going on that you need to address immediately. And they require you to hop out of your chair, to move quickly. How about getting up off the floor quickly? Like, oh my God, you know, I have to run after that grandchild and, you know, whatever. Something's going on. So the way I look at it is muscle power really addresses survival. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's a very key point. I like to think of it as well. I think that's where the kind of confusion becomes with muscle power. It's always kind of, oh, that's an athletic thing. That's just athletes just need power. But we've seen kind of the decline in power as we age is significantly greater than the decline in strength. So in order, as you put, to survive, in order to really get there quickly, it's that speed aspect again that we mentioned, that velocity. So kind of even from our neurological aspects of we're sending impulse to the muscle to contract, we need efficient pathways in order to do that.
What happens over time? When you're young, you've got muscle power and strength, right? You know, when you were younger in college and kicking the damn soccer ball around, you know, you were cool. What happens over age to muscle and power, and when does that begin?
Inevitably, it's going to decline. The latest studies that are coming out shows that power declines significantly more rapidly than strength. Kind of within the previous lot of research, we've been seeing around 50 years old, around menopause. But the more research has been coming out, especially that research article you mentioned earlier, says it can start as early as 30 years old. So that's very young to be starting that decline. And they also mentioned that in women, that decline will be greater. So that's very concerning. And the one thing that I would like to touch about that article, it's that even though they initially start with a decline, the muscle mass stays relatively stable for a period of time. It's the power, the strength, and also we mentioned the VO2. So it's the muscle quality that's really decreasing. So even if they're maintaining or were able to maintain that muscle mass, the quality of muscle is still declining. That's where that power and strength output really comes into play.
I think that that is so ridiculously important. You know that I'm a body composition nutcase. And so, you know, obviously, when we measure body composition, we're looking at the total amount of lean body mass and muscle, and at the same time, fat and bone, et cetera. And I think a lot of people get complacent. Oh, look, you know, I still have the same amount of muscle. I haven't lost much. And they say, I'm good. You know, like we're good here. And what you're saying is, not really. Let's just stick to women. So if we look at women, muscle power and strength, both, they peak around somewhere between 25 and 35 years old, you know, and that makes sense, you know, bone peaks at that same time, right? And then you've got this, you know, slow, gradual decrease in power and strength. But what you're saying is that one of the first things to go is power, not strength. Ooh, that's scary. Yes.
Yes, very scary.
Why is that?
Greater. I think it's also due to the neurological component of power as well. So the rate of force development, how efficient our neurological system is at sending the impulses to the muscle telling us to contract, how quickly we can contract, the efficiency and the quality of the muscle contraction as we're declining with age.
Okay, so what you're giving me is another reason to be depressed about the aging process. You already threw out menopause and you lost half the audience. They're like, no, come on, not one more thing. Give me a break here. But, you know, that's something that mass majority of people don't know, that you lose that power edge going real quickly, you know, and back and forth. But, you know, what you're saying also is based upon the study, you better hold on to it. You know what's interesting about this? I want to say that in the study, they were using specific power movements in the upper body to be able to measure power. But for strength, it was very interesting. They used one of my most favorite things, the hand grip. So I have my own little Camry. Of course, you have the fancy schmancy because you're at the hospital for special surgery. But I've got my little $30, you know, Camry. And by the way, I have nothing new with the company. It's just that it's been around since dinosaurs ruled the earth. And it's cheap and it's straightforward. And you just simply squeeze down, right? And that hand grip is actually used as a metric to be able to look at whole body strength. So it has nothing to do other than, you know, you didn't break your hand or something, but has nothing to do with how strong your hand is, has nothing to do with that. It's just that it's actually a full manifestation of your entire body. And the way I do it is I kind of really bear down. So I get my whole body involved in it. There's also one that has been used by exercise physiologists and physical therapists where you're sitting. And that's a sitting hand grip. But I would so encourage you to go out and purchase the hand grip equipment. And what I do is I measure myself about once a month, right? And I want to make sure I'm crushing it. Okay, so in the hand grip box comes a sheet of paper that has all the norms for male and female, right? And it shows you weak, average, and strong for that particular gender and age, right? And so what's really cool is when you look at your number and you go, hey, you know, and you look at the piece of paper and you go, dang, you know, I'm right up there with somebody 20 years younger than I am. I so crushed it today. And so I just love that feeling. And it doesn't matter where you start. You know, if you're starting out and a little bit weaker, maybe lower end of average, no problem. It's called training. And that's how you get that little hummer up there. But I love the fact they use hand grip, and I want to see more and more and more of that in people's offices. You know, fitness professionals always use it, but in physical therapists, but I want to see it in doctors' offices. And it's a no-brainer to do. And so, you know, I was happy about that. I was a happy person, actually. Okay, so that's cool. Now, the question then, you know, as we're kind of going through this whole thing, is what does this actually look like? So this is what, after reading your article, what I decided to do was to play around with something I love. I do the kettlebell deadlift. I do a double hand on the 50 pound or more. And, you know, most of the time I'm very pleased with lifting that little hummer. Try it sometime. You know, I'm a woman. Okay, so, but what I decided to do was to check my power because I was checking my strength. And so what I did was on the up, you know, as you're lifting it up, I went fast. Okay, now I have very good form and excellent posture. As was you mentioned in the article, never ever attempt higher velocity until you have absolutely cemented form and posture. Because, you know, you and I, George, both believe in like no injuries here. But you can start kind of crawling up there with increased velocity. And so I did. I could do most of my reps, I can do in a sub 2 second. So it takes me less than 2 seconds. And it's really interesting feeling, but boy, is that a heart pounder. So here's my question to you. When people are doing high intensity interval training, which is what I was doing when I increased the velocity, and I was just like hammering that sucker, okay? Is that muscle power?
Yes. So I'd just like to touch upon the hand grip as well. Absolutely love the hand grip. I perform initial intakes when people come in routinely throughout kind of testing.
Awesome. Love the hand grip. Good for you.
Mm-hmm. And people are always stunned. I tell them this is a whole body assessment of strength. And they tell me, no way. I'm telling them, yes, it is. And it's very important. They see their scores and let's try and beat it. Let's train and let's beat it next time when we retest. So hand grip, beautiful test. Love it. In terms of the movement, it's really about the quality of the movement. Like we said, we need good posture. We need good range of motion, flexibility to be able to get into those positions. And I love you have great form, I'm sure of it. We need to be able to have good form in order to do those movements correctly. If we haven't got a good base of strength, haven't got great posture, we're kind of not doing the movements very well. When we add that speed element, that's when we could be at risk. And like we said here, no injuries. That'd be great. So once we're moving at that speed and we're purposefully, that's what I like to add to it, purposely moving with velocity through the concentric phase, like you said, the up motion, and we're adding that quality of movement, that's when we're training our muscle power. So when we think about rest time, I like to add that into it too. So we're really looking at muscle power. So we're working the muscle. We need to have adequate rest to make sure we're ready to go again. As we want to move high force quickly. If we haven't allowed adequate rest between sets, we're not going to be able to have the quality of the repetition. We're not training our muscle power as well.
So is that high intensity interval training?
Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's high intensity.
So are you saying then that high intensity interval training is actually training you to have more muscle power?
Yes. High-intensity training is including muscle power. You see a spike in the heart rate as well, even when we're training those exercises. It's very important. High-intensity training is great.
I mean, I'm hitting VO2 max on those suckers. And I also look at METs, you know, the metabolic equivalents, because, phew, I'm telling you, it's exhausting and it's wonderful. It's very aerobic. So, you know, so I played around with that. Now you got me hooked. So I'm like, you know, I can now do, let's see, a set of 20 reps, 50 pounds in 38 seconds. So that's 1,000 pounds accrued. Okay, so I kind of gave myself a little high five, you know,
fantastic.
And I said, girl,
wow, I'm impressed.
Said, I'm going to tell George about that one. Like, you know, we can do this. But it's true for all high intensity interval training. So you don't know it, but you're actually training for muscle power. So although muscle power started to decline between 25 and 35, it started, right? How much of that stuff can you bring back with training?
Oh, it's absolutely recoverable. So I know we've talked about this decline that's always been kind of sad. Oh no, I've missed the boat. There's no missing the boat. I'd like, personally, people should start when they're younger. I don't want to say forget about it while you're younger. Let's start a good base. I like to think of it as investment for later on. But there's no missing the boat. 12 weeks of training have shown dramatic improvements in muscle power. That's all it takes. And these aren't high complex movements of Olympic lifts or anything like that. They're just purposeful up motions of the concentric phase. And they can be as simple as starting with a glute bridge. I've never done power training before. I'm going to start with a glute bridge. That concentric phase when we're going up in the glute bridge, if we do that with velocity and we're training over time, we will get more improvements in muscle power.
Huh. So I do a weighted glute bridge. So I have a single arm dumbbell, usually at 30 or 40 pounds on me, with a nice thick towel so I don't break my pelvis. So you're telling me that by doing it faster on the up, which is where I'm doing most of the work, will help. Okay, well, that's actually very cool then. I'm liking that. All right. Now, you also mentioned a little earlier this whole issue of neuromuscular activation. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask you why that's so important and what's up with brain health. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right. Now, this whole issue of neuromuscular activation and the brain and the fact that when you do exercises that enhance muscle power, that you're actually truly supporting brain health? How's that work?
Absolutely. Well, I like to think of it as mind to muscle. So we're thinking of a contraction. We're sending an impulse, an electrical impulse, through our neurological system to the muscle. At the muscle, there's calcium release in order to allow actin and myosin to bind to form the contraction. But essentially, the more we train that, the more efficient we make those neurological pathways. So that traveling through the neurons to the muscle becomes more efficient. It's quicker. That's what helps our rate of force development. So how quickly we can produce that force. So training power is great because you get kind of more bang for your buck almost. You're getting the neurological bonuses from the brain all the way down through the nervous system, and you're also improving your muscle power.
And it also triggers the release of calcium within muscle fibers, right? So that's good. And that allows them to contract. So the whole thing looks pretty cool. Oh my gosh, I love this. And, you know, you also said muscle power training improves your ability to recruit more muscle fibers, especially the fast twitch fibers. Sometimes we call them type 2 fibers, but fast twitch fibers. And that, you know, makes it even better for boosting force production. So that's cool. So we're getting a little, you know, a little bonus brain action here too. Now everyone is out there in the Her podcast land saying, well, wait a minute now. How do you train for muscle power? What do you do in particular? What would you tell them to do?
So there's lots and lots of different ways. It really depends on where you're at with your training. Like the simplest example I can give, glute bridge. We're on the floor. There's no risk of falling, injury. We're kind of down in that glute bridge. We're raising. Or hip thrusts. We're raising our hips. We're thrusting, but we're doing it with purpose, and we're adding that velocity component. Once we start to get comfortable there, we can add kind of into plyometrics. So even from the glute bridge, okay, I've got really comfortable. I've just started my strength training. I'm doing my glute bridges really well. I'm getting good velocity on that up movement, the concentric phase of it. So we can maybe move to add a little jump into there. So we're lifting our feet off the ground while we're raising into our glute bridge. So again, that added bonus of that plyometric kind of jump into there. But to think about it, we're still lying on the floor. I'm not going to fall doing a glute bridge with a jump in my feet. So I'm still being very safe and I'm making sure our form is good. And we can go all the way. So really basic kind of plyometric training like that, where we're focusing on the velocity. And we can go all the way and we can add jumps. We can add step ups. I like step ups a lot as a precursor to adding into jumps. And then we increase height. And I really think it's a nice way to really start from the beginning to make sure we've got it kind of mind to muscle. We know what we're doing. We're getting into good form. And we can raise all the way to where we're doing our jumps. We're doing our lifts. We're doing our things with speed and velocity. And we're really progressing the complication of the movements.
I like building a nice, strong foundation in any of these movements before you start increasing velocity. And as we said before, and I'm kind of repeating that to make sure that people don't literally just jump into this, you need to have, you know, experience with this. So going upstairs. Now, we all know how to go upstairs. If you don't, well, okay, you know, get help. All right. So we know how to go upstairs. What if you just sort of held on to the handrail, you know, a little lightly, and then just started picking up a tad bit of speed, just a little bit. And what I like is sort of crawling toward the goal, you know, instead of going from zero to I'm going a million miles an hour. Now, one of the things that was brought up is also another standard test for people's longevity, and that's the sit to stand. Tell us how you do that for power.
Yes. So the sit to stand, we're going from a chair into a full standing position. without the use of the hands. So very, very common as well when we think of activities of daily living, from getting up to a chair, people don't realize how much muscle power is actually included in our lives. Like getting up from chair, walking up the stairs, like you said, can we get up those stairs? Muscle power is always involved. The sit to stand has been very good. It's been very helpful with timing on the time to get up and down and the reps. So it'll be a certain amount of reps from sit to stand, and we're going up and down, up and down. It's been very useful.
You know, the testing out there, there's two sit to stand tests that I recall. One is involves 11 seconds, I think, and then the other one is 30 seconds. In each case, it would seem to me that getting up and sitting down, getting up and sitting down, I mean, you want to kind of like, you know, really pick up the speed here, and you're doing it fast for both movements because you can't just dawdle around if all you have is 11 seconds to be able to, you know, get your point across. With something like a sit to stand, the actual testing, the muscle power movement is actually both movements, standing up and getting down to your chair, just enough to be able to, you know, have your butt touch the floor, you know, the chair, and then up you go again. So it's like you never stop. Is that right?
Yes, the concentric and the eccentric phases. So the up and the down, we're looking at that for the sit to stand. Similar to what we said about going up the stairs, also going down the stairs, we need eccentric strength as well, eccentric power in activities of daily living. It's good to be focusing on the concentric, especially when we're starting off with muscle power, but really adding that eccentric in component into there too. It's very beneficial for all rounds, so the full range of motion up and down.
What can people do all day long just in their activities of daily living, including walking the dog, right, whatever, where they can start training a little bit more into power? So go through someone's day, like what could they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the stairs. I think a lot of people relate to stairs really well. Just going up the stairs with purpose and focus on speed with the addition of the handrails, I think it's very good for stability. I remember, well, when I help train clients, I'll have a step and I'll have them next to a rail just to kind of help with their step up in terms of climb the stairs. Climb the stairs, very good one. Groceries, kind of carrying groceries, lifting up the groceries from the floor. It all comes back to muscle power. I'm thinking about if I'm lifting my groceries from the floor, do I want to be down there for a very long time struggling to get them up? I want to be efficient in that movement. I want to work on my power to be able to lift the groceries from the floor and achieve my task of daily living. More efficiency at the end of the day leads to an improvement in quality of life. So I think that's the overall goal, not just longevity, but the quality of that longevity.
I have an interesting question for you. Does strength predict power?
Great question. And a lot of people would also say they're the same thing, which is very, very miscommon. It's not too common. People hear strength, power. Oh, it's the same thing. They're all related.
They say to themselves, I'm powerful.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm very strong, or I've got good hypertrophy. My muscles are very big. I must be strong. I must be powerful. It's not quite the same. They have some sort of relatability, but they're very different between them. Somebody really does have the capability to be strong, to be able to move a large amount of force, but not be powerful. In a similar way, in order to be powerful, you need a certain degree of strength. I like to think of an athlete example. So if I've got the ability to produce 1,000 watts of force, and I'm going up against somebody that can only produce 900 watts of force, I'm stronger. But if I'm going up in a duel or a battle and they can produce that 900 watts in less than a second and it takes me longer to produce that 1,000 watts, they're going to beat me in that duel. Exactly, they're going to beat me in that duel in survival. I'm gone. So as power is really good. Strength, I think, is very important, and you also need a basis, a level of strength to be powerful. But they're not quite the same thing. They're almost like an alliance to each other, but different.
So when people are first learning how to, you know, lift weights, for instance, a lot of women, for instance, after the age of 50, never really learn that in gym and whatever. This is a generational gig. When they're doing things like the classic moves in the gym, like a biceps curl or a triceps pull down or, you know, whatever you're doing, should they already, you know, be thinking about the power part of this? Or do you spend a certain amount of time building the strength first and then incorporating power? And if that's true, should you be incorporating power for almost any kind of weightlifting move?
Yes, I believe so. I think we need a foundation of strength. So as we're strength training, I do think it's also important to incorporate the power training into that. I think if we kind of look at a training session, we want to do the power training typically first, maybe a set or two. I don't think if we're initially starting out, we need to have a full power day where we're looking at power, incorporating as much power as we can into there. It's fatiguing and it takes a long time, and it can also be a deterrent. It's not the easiest of motions to do it with velocity. So as we're starting off, I like to think of just incorporating at the start of the workout. We're purposely moving. So to your example, the bicep curls, we start with a slightly lighter weight than we usually would. And we're lifting with a bit more purpose, a bit more velocity. And once we've done a little bit of that, we can go into our regular strength training where we're looking a bit more at perhaps looking at some hypertrophy bonus or some strength training.
Okay. So what we've done, whether people like it or not, is we've just added like one more layer to our little workouts here. So that, you know, when you go into a gym, don't you see people just kind of like, you know, very carefully and cautiously lifting? And, you know, now that's really different than if you're doing more of a picking up a really heavy weight and then doing something with it. I wouldn't expect you to be doing power training with something like that. This is a lower weight with higher velocity on the up and where you're actually doing the lifting and then, you know, chilling out on the down. All right. So we have to keep this in mind and begin to incorporate this into our own workouts so that we do have that. That's why I started doing that kettlebell deadlift crazy thing. And I love it because it's a real different feeling than just kind of doing the usual, you know, lifting, like, okay, you know, we did our lifting. This is more like, oh my God, my heart's pounding out of my damn chest. Now, in my case, you know, I'm a trained athlete, so, you know, don't try this at home. But, you know, I use the same weight. It's still a very heavy weight, but I can do that. Because I have the form and all the rest of it. Everyone else, just, you know, always use a lower weight and then just let that sucker rip. So that means that if you're brisk walking, okay, does that qualify?
Yes, absolutely. Brisk walking is a great way. One of the studies that I think we referenced earlier as well, they looked at walking speed. Typically, as you're getting older, we want to keep good walking speed. 0.8 meters per second is kind of the threshold for a good walking speed. Kind of, we see people who walk slower than that typically are more frail, so they haven't got that muscle power to be able to walk at those higher speeds. I think brisk walking and really putting into the movements is very important.
Well, that's another longevity metric that people use, and that is the gait, right?
Yes.
So what is that gait test?
The gait test? So when we're looking at individuals' gaits, we're looking at how they're walking. Typically, I like to do the gait test. I like to kind of have a longer hallway and see how people are walking to give them enough space to kind of get into the motion. Any changes in gait, any unnatural gaits is kind of a not so promising predictor. And you're also looking at the time that it takes them to travel a certain distance. Typically, they look for 4 meters, the time it gets to take to 4 meters, because you're looking at that power concept again, distance, time. So we're looking at that velocity of the movement.
So you're looking at their form, the speed, you know, their posture, just the whole thing, and see whether or not they can, you know, get through those 4 meters pretty quickly. And that's the way. So everyone out there in the Herb podcast land, one of the things you need to understand, right, is that there are lots and lots of different ways to be able to measure mortality, longevity, and really it gets down to what can that gorgeous body of yours actually do? And we're looking at cardiovascular fitness, flexibility, posture, body composition. Those are all incredibly important. And this is a foundation of strength that we need, solid foundation of all those things I just mentioned. But here's something else also. What you want to do is realize that if you wanted to save your own life, right? I was thinking, I've mentioned this one example in the past on my podcast. And yes, I will repeat it because I love this story. So when I was at the National Institutes of Health, I was helping one of the top executives who had just retired, a woman in her mid-60s, who was not in the world's greatest shape when she retired, wiping shock off face. And of course, she wanted to get herself in good health. And so she did. And I'm telling you, she was the best student ever. I mean, she just crushed it. So this is at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda. And there we have some beautiful homes, they're older homes with gorgeous gardens. And she had a magnificent rose garden that was up a number of steps, stone steps, to get to the top. And one day I got a wild and crazy phone call from her. She was like yelling at the top of me. I pick up the phone like, well, hello? Someone's like yelling. And she says, Dr. Reed, I have to come in and I have to see you. I said, I have people with me right now. She goes, I don't care. I go, okay. And she says, I have to tell you something. So sure, she came in and she was tracking mud from her rose garden. And in her hands were just beautiful bouquet of roses. I mean, it was like outstanding. And she says, here's the story. She says, when I met you, I was really weak physically. You know, I couldn't believe it. And then I lifted weights and I kept doing my gardening and I'm getting stronger and stronger. I've dropped a boatload of my own body fat. It's gone. I'm feeling so much better, more balanced, whatever. And I was at the very top of the stairs, you know, pruning my roses when about a 35-pound spider, you know, fell down, you know, right in front of my face on his little, you know, like steel-like tendril. And it just shocked her, you know. I mean, she's used to the spiders and stuff, but it was like, you know, it's like 1 inch from her eye. And it just, whoa. And what she would have normally done if she was not strong and if she hadn't dropped that weight, she hadn't, you know, practiced balancing, is she would have fallen backwards. And if she fell backwards, she could have died. Because those were stone steps. And if her head clocked on one of those babies, you know, we're done. Instead, what she did was she had a nice strong arm. She was like, you know, and grabbed onto a branch. And then with her core strength engaged, twisted around and got herself upright. And then she glanced down at the bottom of the stairs and said, oh my God, that's where I would have ended up. I am so strong. And now here's what's interesting. That was pure muscle power because she had to go fast. You know, we have the 35-pound spider, 1 inch from your nose, right? And she was grabbing, twisting, turning. The whole thing happened in seconds. And that's muscle power and that's survival. What do you say?
Oh, it certainly is. That story's really made my day. Just the ability for her to forcefully contract quickly in order to get out of the way of that spider instead of, like you said, falling down the stairs. And that could have been fatal. And really her training and that end of the story, which ended up being very, very happy story, could have had a different ending. And that's why I think is very critical just to improve and to increase and to integrate some power training into your regimen.
You know, as we're winding all of this up and we've enlightened people that strength with velocity is muscle power, and muscle power will save your life. There's no question about it. I can count so many times just outside of athletics, obviously. You know, athletics is a no-brainer. You're out there trying to survive. Oh my God, you're on the cycle, you're running, you're swimming, you know, the whole thing. But just in simple life, think for a minute, reflect on how many times your ability to pivot quickly saved your life, or certainly saved you from injuring yourself badly. You know, just reflect on that. Most people never think about that. You know, until I knew about muscle power, I rarely ever did. I was just like, you know, I'm strong. I could break someone's face, no problem. But what about surviving? You know, what about, you know, I remember at Dallas Airport, you know, if most people know Dallas Airport. All right, that baby right there is a marathon. Okay, I'm just saying. So go figure the luck that I ended up in like gate A1 and I had to get to like gate A32. And I had all of about like 9 minutes because it was one of those horrible situations. And I had my carry-on behind me. Thank God it was small. But it was still behind me and it was a pain in the ass. I'm telling you right now, I have never run that fast. I made it. It wasn't pretty. I had sweat, you know, pouring off my face. But it's wild times like that just sort of, you know, it made my life easier than having to wait around for 2 or 3 hours for another flight or whatever the issue may be. Muscle power shows up in your life all the time and you don't even know it. So as we bring this wonderful discussion to a close, and you've been fabulous, what little motivational, informational nugget can you share with women out there who are saying, "Oh, sometimes I just feel like I'm in such rotten shape. Is it even possible to, you know, affect my muscle power?"
Oh, absolutely. And I love that. It really does turn up in every day. I like to think of it as well as children, just to reflect if you do anything for your children and just having that ability to maybe catch them from a fall or to catch them from something as well. I think it really resonates with a lot of people out there. The last thing I guess to take away for people is it's never too late to start. A lot of studies with the older population that haven't really done a lot, you can really improve muscle power within 12 weeks of training. Just consistent training. Once you get in that mindset, the benefits will start flying. It's not just the muscle power is great. It's just great for your mental health. It's great for getting out there and seeing people and the engagement factor. And it does really just improve quality of life just in terms of
cognitive functioning. And exactly. The initial point we made, it's a great predictor of mortality.
Yeah.
So the better you are with your muscle power, I don't know, you're making a big difference in how long you live and how well you live. So how long is lifespan? How well you live is health span. And there you have it. George, you have been absolutely fantastic. You know, those people over there at the Hospital for Special Surgeries are very, very lucky to have someone with your qualifications there. And I hope they know that because, you know, you have stellar background and I know that your patients truly appreciate everything you're doing. So I want to thank you big time for being on the Herb podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a delight.
And everyone, we've been talking to George Youssef, who is an exercise physiologist certified by the American College of Sports Medicine. Our favorite place, right?
Absolutely.
I know. They'll be happy to hear that. That's for sure. All my wonderful colleagues over there. All right. Thank you, George. And I also want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, rooted in nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Scope them out at Solaray, SolaraY.com. Now take a moment and leave us a review, because we sit around waiting for those reviews. We just love those reviews. And everyone out there, you should know that this has been a production of Podcast Health. And here's a little thought for you to end the day. Life is amazing, and then it's awful, and then it's amazing again. And in between the amazing and awful, it's ordinary and mundane and routine. Breathe in the amazing, hold on through the awful, and relax and exhale during the ordinary. That's just living. Heartbreaking, soul healing, amazing, awful, ordinary life. And it's breathtakingly beautiful. And that's from the award-winning author of many parenting books, who I love. His name is L.R. Nost, K-N-O-S-T. I just love that. So everyone out there, carpe diem, have a great one, and thanks for listening.